across the border. We had no power. I think we've a bit of power now.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Hello and welcome along to the latest episode of Warriors, the GAA podcast for you, the 42 members. I'm Kevin O'Brien, and this week we have a Warriors special, where we'll be chatting to Leash man and AFL star, Zach Toohey. So Zach has enjoyed a remarkable career in Australia so far. He's the second most capped Irishman in the AFL, and this weekend he's hoping to play in his 200th game, which is an incredible achievement. A native of Port Leash, he played underage football for a club and county, winning a Leinster minor title with Leash in 2007, before making the move to Australia in 2009. During his time in the AFL, he played with Carlton for 7 years, and has spent the last four seasons lining out with Geelong. He also represented Ireland in the International Rules Series and won a number of county titles with Port Leash after returning home during his off-seasons. So he'll chat about all that and much more with ex-Cavan footballer Nicholas Walsh, who was a former coach with AFL side GWS Giants and currently works in the field of mental health training for the AFL Coaches Association. Let's get straight into it then. This is episode 22 of the Warriors podcast with Geelong's Zach Toohey.
I reached out to you because, you know, obviously we're both in hubs. I'm stuck in a hotel quarantine in Perth at the moment, and you're obviously training and playing up in the Gold Coast with Geelong at the moment and staying in Southport. And I thought it was just an opportunity to, you know, have a chat with you. You were just about to play your 200th game, and, you know, you're pulled at the last minute, and hopefully that happens this weekend. But I guess I wanted to take you, you know, on the journey, or take people, whoever this ends up going out to, on the journey of your career and AFL in general, and different things like that. Like, you're what, 30 years of age now, turning 31 this year, I think.
Yeah.
You know, for people that don't know, Zach's from a place called Port Leash, which is about what, an hour and a half or so from Dublin. Is local club there, are very, very successful, you know, to my knowledge, you know, winning it through most of the 2000s into, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. I believe missed out in 16, 17, 18, 19. And, you know, you just told me they were beaten on the weekend. So obviously a very, very traditional football and hurling stronghold down in Leash. You know, originally went to Carlton back in, you know, 2010. Played 120 games with Carlton, 79 so far with Geelong. And, you know, hopefully, you know, you get up this weekend and play your 200th. And, you know, I guess my career has been much different, where I only lasted a couple of years here and I was sent back to Cavan pretty quickly to play Division 3 and 4 career with Cavan. But, you know, it was good fun, different careers. But, you know, we end up sort of in the one place at the end of the day. And I guess I want to take you back to your journey and, you know, how it's all started and where you were introduced to Aussie rules and, you know, why Carlton and that sort of thing. So where did it first pop up on your radar?
Well, so when I was under 18 or minor back home, Colin Begley was, so he's also from Leash, which is a fairly small, well, as you know, it's a reasonably small county. And so to have a few guys linked with AFL was rare enough, but he was going quite well when I was that age. So I was aware of the game, and Ty Kennelly, you know, when I was younger, was kind of at the height of his powers. And so I was very aware of the game and played under 18s back home. And while that competition was going on, there was word getting about that there was a few AFL scouts going to the games. And, you know, then we started talking, well, geez, how great would it be to get the opportunity, even if it was only to go to a combine and stuff like that. And then post my minor season, I just got a phone call, and I've said this a few times, I obviously wasn't expecting the Australian accent. So when I picked up the phone and heard the Australian accent, I actually thought it was a Northern Ireland accent, yeah, because it just caught me off guard. But anyway, it was a representative from Carlton invited me to a combine. 25 people, maybe 30 people got picked, and that was in 2007. And yeah, I've been here for 11 years now, so it's gone quick.
Yeah, definitely does go quick. And, you know, at that time then, you know, did you know much about the game? Like, it was on bits and pieces of TV at home. Obviously, the profile of Tig was heightened because he was, you know, so at the height of his game, as you said. But what was your understanding of the game before you came over?
Fairly surface, yeah. I do actually remember watching a documentary about Setanto Halpin, who was at Carlton as well, but this was before they had contacted me at all, so it was kind of totally coincidental that he would go on to be my teammate, or I'd go on to be his. But a fairly surface understanding, followed Colin Begley a little bit, could identify the game and the basics of it, wouldn't have appreciated any of the nuance, probably couldn't have told you the name of any more than a handful of teams. But immediately once I was contacted by Carlton, even when they just expressed the interest before anything formal was laid down, I watched it. I just would have watched hours and hours of it a week. I find it aesthetically a very pleasing game to watch, so it was easy even when I didn't understand it. And as soon as I realised there was a possibility I could be playing it, I just watched it flat stick. In those days, you could get the highlights on Siddhanta, which was the channel, not the person. Yeah. You'd get the highlights every weekend, and we'd settle in or we'd record it, and then me and my parents would skip to the highlights for Carlton's games that weekend and count how many goals Fev kicked and all these things. As soon as I was contacted, I made it my job to understand the game as quickly as I could. And I reckon after a few months, I was fairly well versed in the game, even naming players and coaches and a little bit of the history of the club. So picked it up fairly quick.
And was Carlton the only club that was sort of after you at the time? You mentioned a combine. Was there like a number of clubs that approached you? Or was, you know, I know you're a pretty, you know, loyal person, and us Irish are generally pretty loyal. And, you know, the first club that comes knocking, you know, I guess, did you latch on to them, or was there a few others as well?
No, there wasn't many others. The combine I went to was a Carlton combine. So it wasn't one of those ones that gets, you know, representative from each club. Looking back, honestly, I think the reality was that there was probably quite a few players that most clubs would have picked ahead of me. Kieran Sheehan, who ended up coming a few years later, won an All-Ireland with Cork, and eventually decided to stay back home. I've no doubt in my mind the club were far more interested in him than me at that time. He would have had a bigger reputation than me. And likewise, I'm not sure many other clubs would have really spotted me. So in many ways, I'm really lucky to have been given the opportunity, because whatever it was, Jared, the guy who brought me out, saw in me. I don't reckon too many other teams saw it. Like I said, I love the game. So once the opportunity came up, I took it very, very seriously. But Carlton were the only team early doors on the radar for me.
Excellent. And, you know, obviously they invested, you know, in you, you know, quite heavily, even when you were home, from an education point of view, I'm talking about. And for you to be hungry in knowledge, you know, to learn and look at those clips on Setanta Sports at the time, and then come out with that grounded knowledge of AFL, you know, was there a specific plan or development plan that they put in place when you were at home, or was it just ad hoc stuff that they would throw to you every so often to keep an eye on?
Yeah, it was more, it was a little bit more scattershot than anything too specific. To be honest, from memory, I was pretty keen to do as much of it myself as I could. Obviously, they like sent home a little bit of equipment, footies and stuff like that for me to get used to. I don't remember any plans being sent home. In fact, I reckon I probably did a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of that side of the game myself before I came to the club. And I think the pathways are probably a little bit better established now with regards to drafting the Irish guys. I think they're probably looked after a bit better than I was at the time, and I'm sure it's improved since, you know, you started out in the game. But they monitored me closely. But the couple of years before I came out, after they made initial contact, I was more or less left to my own devices, just with fairly regular communication from the club.
Yeah, excellent. And, you know, what's your first sort of memories of coming out? I remember, you know, I landed over, I think, like, I know it was the 4th of November because it was my mother's birthday, so I remember the date. And I left Ireland, so it must have been the 5th when I arrived. And I was collected at the airport, and we were brought straight to do a 4K time trial. And, you know, it was about 25, 26 degrees at that time. And I'm sure I thought it was the warmest I was ever been in. Well, I was the warmest I'd ever been in. And, you know, I ran it, obviously, slow enough. 4K, it was 4K time trial back then, by the way. And now it's down to 2s and 1s. And just the heat. That's an everlasting memory. And that's many years ago now. That was in November 2000. Yeah. So that's 20 years ago, Jesus. You know, so have you any, you know, standout memories like that sort of shocked you and it stays with you?
Well, funnily enough, actually, I've kind of got the exact opposite story. When I first came out from a two-week trial, it was late in the year. I can't remember what time, but it was towards the back end of the season. And it's not that warm in Melbourne at that time of year. But the first game I ever went to was up in Ballarat, which is, you know, a couple of hours outside Melbourne. And it gets fresh up there, proper cold. And, of course, I was coming to Australia for the first time ever. So I only packed T-shirts and shorts and flip-flops. And, gosh, it's Australia. And I went up there and I had to wear Isaiah Halpine's jacket because he was also playing at the time. And I've never been so cold in all my life. So that was a shock to my system, me thinking it would be beaches and supermodels. It's not quite like that in Ballarat at that time of the year. But in terms of the training side of stuff, yeah, I remember doing, you would have done Princess Park.
Yes.
So I got thrown in the deep end with the Princess Park run early on as well, and would have run a terrible time. Like, I've never done a time trial. You know, at that stage, I'd never done a time trial in my life. And, you know, in my own naivety, I figured, I'll just take off, run as hard as you can. Yeah, how hard can it be? You get 600 meters in and your lungs are down at your ankles. And so, I had a few shocks to the systems. I'd never cramped in my life until my first game in Australia. Little things like that. Because you don't realise how long the game is. It's 2 hours. It's an outrageous amount of time to play in football, yeah. But, a few shocks.
Yeah, I remember one of my first game. I was over, luckily, with the international rules side at the time. We were playing Australia and we went to, I think it was Richmond Essendon round one. And it wasn't Richmond Essendon. It was, I can't remember at this stage, Richmond someone anyway. And Richmond Carlton, actually, it was. Mm-hmm. But it was back in 2001 or 2000 at the time. Actually, it was 99, sorry, at the time.
And you're getting older every
single time. I know. It's bad. I'd have to bloody, you know, top up there. But anyway, with that, it was so long. Like, it was so long, the game. You know, and I remember some of the other players were there at the time saying, jeez, this is a long game. Like, you know, it was so, so long. But anyway, it's now you go home and, you know, I was home recently and I was at, you know, a couple of Cavan Gales games at home and they were so short. You know, you go back and it's unreal that, you know, and I remember the key thing that you were being told is, through GA games, you know, you got to pace yourself. You know, you always have to pace yourself. You know, where here is, you're told to go as hard as you can for as long as you can for, you know, 2 hours and get your rest and that sort of mindset. But look, let's look at your debut back in 2011, you know, turn of misfortune turned into fortune for you and you were elevated off the rookie list and you made your debut that year versus Port Adelaide. At the time, you started sort of as a, you know, a tagger, run with type player, because you obviously have a, you know, a good engine and stuff like that. And I think it's an interesting way to start off an Irish player because you'd get to learn the game relatively quickly. Obviously, your game has developed and you've gone on to play, you know, 199 games now as this rebound defender or lockdown defender that you can sort of hybrid come through and sort of really known for this distinct long kick that you have as well. Talk me through the journey of your development, you know, from round or first game you played to where you are now with Geelong.
Yeah, well, the thing I've always found most difficult about the game, and I don't know if your experience as a coach and player backs this up, but for the Irish guys coming out, just the dynamics and structure of the game is so much different. I can remember really struggling with the idea of all these different setups for different stoppages, and I was even really nervous in my first intra-club about when to come on and off the ground. Because it was an alien concept to me. And I was like, I'm going to run off at the wrong time. I'm going to cost the team. And obviously, looking back now, that's such a small thing to be worried about. But it just, none of it made sense. So the idea of tagging players and playing really closely to them is just, look, go and play on them and let them take you to the ball. And you'll slowly figure out the game and the patterns from there. And I did that and learned the game reasonably quick. But as a result, I also became quite sound defensively and ended up having to lock down on small forwards for probably the first 4 or 5 years of my career, which was fine and happy to do it. I do sometimes look back at my career now and wonder if I could have fast-tracked my development in those early years because I got into the side, was playing pretty good, but when I look at the player I was, even just 6 or 7 years into my career and the player I was 3 or 4 years into my career, I didn't get any faster or stronger in that period. I don't think I got any fitter. But yet my game had changed dramatically in that period. And look, every player would like to get to their peak as quick as possible. But I think by virtue of be doing those real tight defensive jobs early, I potentially pigeonholed myself for a season or two longer than I had to, because I definitely knew the game pretty well after 4 or 5 years. And then the change of scenery moving to Geelong, I just kind of got to effectively wipe that slate totally clean and basically be whatever player I wanted to be, or whatever player I wanted to show Geelong I was. I could do it from the get-go, because although they would have been watching me, there was no preconceived notions about who or what I was. So that was really refreshing, but that was 7 years into my career. So, yeah, it's a great way of learning the game. The players who've played it their whole lives can take you to the ball and you can kind of figure it out yourself from there. But definitely understanding the nuance of how to play the game is much harder than the actual physical actions of playing the game.
Yeah, and that's, you know, some, you know, when I have conversations with people around, you know, the Irish game, like the GAA is so closely linked to the AFL. Yes, it is in ways, but it's miles apart as well. Like, definitely, you know, I agree with you, the structures and the stoppages and setups is, it's so alien from to the GAA game. Albeit when I went back to watch the GAA recently in club football, and the new kickouts that are coming out and everything like that is not too different from what's happening in the Australian game with kick-ins, kick-out zones and all that sort of stuff as well at the moment. So GAA, I won't say it's progressing, but it's games are coming sort of closer in line in terms of different stoppages and structure. And I guess Dublin have a big part to play in that for studying like the rugby, AFL and other codes like basketball and American football as well that they look closely at.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well. Like the few years I went back after my initial few years in Australia, I couldn't believe some of the training they were doing and the things they were talking about. And I was like, well, I kind of wish we were doing this 2 or 3 years before I left. I would have been slightly better prepared when I got out here because, yeah, as you say, a lot of the structures and stuff are very similar now. But, you know, when I was playing minor in that, from memory, and maybe I'm looking at it through rose-tinted glasses, but it was just kind of go out and play. I don't remember it being quite as tactical as it is now, but it's definitely heading that way.
Yeah, most definitely. Let's go back to, you know, GAA and your Port Leash times. And, you know, it's pretty well documented, and you've never shied away from the fact that you have gone home in the off-season, you know, played with Port Leash, come off the bench a couple of times, won a couple of county championships, represented in the Leinster Championship as well. How did you get away with it? Like, you know, from a club point of view.
Honestly, I'll tell you what I did, and I wouldn't advise it, but I asked if I could play in my first year and got shot down pretty quick and went home and played anyway. And after that point, I just stopped asking and just played. But look, the club knew. Yeah. And had to. And it was said to me, but they didn't really care. Like, that's in they just didn't care as long as they didn't get injured. And I understand it's not a significant risk. You're taking a bit of a risk when you go back and play. But the way I look at it is if teams want to pick up Irish guys and bring them out, as great an opportunity as it is and as grateful as the Irish guys would be, you have to understand that it's different than the other guys you're drafting here. And if they can understand the pull from clubs when they go home, I actually think it's good business practice to allow them to play, to actually tell them, go home in your off season, enjoy your break, be careful. But if you want to tug out and play, play, but come back in a good headspace. Now, it's only going to take one significant injury for everyone to turn around and say, oh, how daft were you? But the alternative is not much better. The homesickness it can lead to not playing, the feeling of home. You lose it. Like, players will come back in a much better headspace. You train with your club, you come back far fitter than you would if you were training by yourself. Again, one injury and everyone will turn around and say it was a daft idea, but I reckon the good severely outweighs the bad if you're a club looking to draft out of Ireland.
And did you ever feel there was pressure on you from home to play when you're at home? Was it a pressure thing?
No, well, look, not really. I mean, there's plenty of supporters, I'm sure, were hoping I'd play, but there wasn't really from the club. And I've gotten a bit better the older I've gotten. I just couldn't get home and watch Port Leash play and not play. Like, I seriously found it just way too hard to go to a game and not be playing. And the few years that you mentioned where I came off the bench, that was like real progression for me. I went to them and said, listen, I'll tug out, but if things are going well, don't play me, because that's best of both worlds. But then we got to a county final and we were a few points down late in the game. And I just remember literally poking the manager and just bring me on. I'll see what happens. So even at that stage, I couldn't really fight the urge. But like I said, again, of course, it's football. Of course, you can get injured. But I've also seen blokes whizzing down Mount Bulla holding GoPros at 60 k's an hour. I'm pretty sure we're not contractually allowed to do that either. Yeah. So I'm not sure I totally buy the idea that it's... but anyway, I'm venting now. You're like my therapist.
Yeah, no, look at it. There was a couple of times I went home 02, 03, played with Calvin Gales in semi-finals and finals as well. And for me to keep that camaraderie within the club and keep your friendships that, you know, you've grown up with. And it's not, I don't call it a pressure, but I guess in a way, and always in my mind that, you know, I have left and I'd love to be able to give something back type thing, even though I went back and played. But it was that sort of community sense that sort of I feel that lacks here, because it's a professional game and it's a business and all that sort of thing. But you're right, like, and I know players who play soccer, basketball, other sports during their off season and during the season, which we won't name names, and to get away with doing it. So an GAA game on a Sunday morning in Portlaoise is not too bad, or Sunday afternoon. Come here, sticking with the club for a second at Portlaoise, I'm talking about the decision to leave home, you know, at that time, and club that was beginning to be, or that steeped in tradition and was, you know, going to progress because you had a really, really good team. You know, was there any doubts or backlash or anything like that at the time from the locals?
No, certainly no backlash. In fact, quite the opposite. The club threw a going away party and were incredibly supportive and have been right throughout. I'd like to think at least a few people from the club wish I stayed. I'd be slightly insulted if they didn't. I hope so. Some of them might have been glad to see the back of me, mind you. But yeah, you're right. Like, leaving was hard. The idea of not giving AFL a crack never occurred to me, because I was always desperate to be a professional sports person. And this was such a perfect opportunity for that. But again, we won the Club Leinster in the first year I left. I still haven't watched that. I can't even watch the highlights of that Leinster final. Yeah, I just can't. And then even worse still, the Leinster finals we've reached since and lost by a point or 2 points, or All-Ireland semi-finals that we've lost by a point or 2 points. That's when I found the guilt really sets in. Like, I genuinely feel like I've let people down in those instances, because we've fallen short by a point or two to the Dublin champions on a number of occasions, and the Dublin champions have subsequently gone on to walk the Club All-Ireland. Like, I think Vincent's won the Club All-Ireland by 11 points 1 year or something like that. And they only just got over us that year. And that's happened a few times. And while there's no guarantee I wouldn't have made the loss even more significant, there's a slight chance I could have made a difference. And that thought is really, really uncomfortable. That's the most homesickness I've ever had, is like when we won that Leinster. And on those few occasions after that where we fell a couple of points short in big games, hate. And again, it's the drive when you get home. It's like you said, I feel like I owe them a bit. And there's deep down, I probably feel like I walked out on them. But I know that's a bit harsh, and I know they don't feel that way. But when they lose by a point in a big game, it's hard not to feel like maybe you should have been there. But yeah, sirrah, sirrah.
Yeah, exactly. And look, we spoke about Carlton, and we'll move on to Geelong, and I don't want to get bogged down into the political element of this, but it was a big, obviously, change for you. And, you know, I guess my question around this is, you know, Geelong is it's a pretty big town in terms of Australian standards, or in terms of Irish standards, but it is a commuter town, we call it here. It's a smaller town, about an hour outside Melbourne. How have you embedded yourself within the community of Geelong? And I guess, you know, your partner Beck and the kids, Flynn and Rafferty, who's one and a half now.
Yeah.
So how have they sort of embedded themselves into the community, and how closely is it linked to the likes of Ireland?
Yeah, it is. It's much more like a town. Like, it's not dissimilar to Portlaoise in a lot of ways. It's literally just Portlaoise with a much larger urban sprawl and a slightly more significant CBD, but it's not skyscrapers.
And a couple of beaches.
Yeah, and a couple of beaches. Yeah, there's actually quite a few differences if you want to start naming them. But in terms of lifestyle, like, it's easy to get around. There's no major traffic, which doesn't sound like a big plus, but you've lived in Sydney and these places, traffic can be a bit of a killer.
And Cavan.
And Cavan, of course. Yeah, the big schmuck up in Cavan. But yeah, the lifestyle is great. I mean, it's a one club town, so the support is incredible. It's easy to get around, and kind of philosophically how Geelong are run in terms of how the players are looked after and the way the schedule is done, it lends itself to a lot of downtime and a lot of family time if you've got kids. So it's really easy to feel a part of the club. And as you know, we win more often than we lose. And from a player's point of view, that can really change your outlook on everything, especially coming from a big club in Melbourne that had underperformed for a number of years. It was really stressful. So it was easy to kind of feel like you were part of the club, because honestly, from some of what I was used to, it was all rainbows and unicorns, really. So, I love Geelong. I love the town and the club.
Excellent. And Beck and the kids have settled in well there?
Yeah, mate, perfect. Like, it is just such a tight little town. And I'm not sure if we end up staying in Australia post-career, I don't think we'll leave Geelong. I'm not sure we'll move anywhere else. So
great. Oh, good. So look, let's talk a little bit about some of the other boys. And obviously, you know, just as of yesterday, Conor McKenna, you know, announced his retirement. Pierce Hanley announced his retirement just last week. You know, what I know you haven't experienced it, but what are some of the factors that could potentially go through these boys' minds with, you know, the likes of Conor could have had, you know, a further career, great player, and could have probably played another 10 years here easy. Likes of Pierce too was probably time because of his body, but other boys that are probably in second, maybe third year, you know, of their contract, sort of deciding, will I, won't I, what are some of the deciding factors? And there's probably no right or wrong. If they want to go home, great, career, go home, or if they want to stay, but what are some of the deciding factors that you would sort of mentor these young guys through?
Well, the one thing I always say, because every Irish player I think has had homesickness in some degree, and the one thing I always say is that just imagine yourself in 12 months sitting back at home in Ireland and you're playing your club football and you're back in university or whatever, and imagine the alternative to that is playing regular AFL football. Now, if right now things might seem hard and you're playing twos, but which of those two options would you pick? And if you're going to pick the playing regular AFL, then you got to give yourself a chance, because you can always get that first option. You can always get that Irish one. But if you go home too early, you're not always going to get the professional career. The pull from clubs and your local community is never going to go away. It hasn't gone away for me. I've been here 11 years. So that's always a challenge as well. And like I said, it's a fairly combative industry and it's fairly cutthroat. And if things aren't going your way after 3 or 4 years, it is difficult to hang around knowing full well you get great opportunity back in Ireland. But for me, I was always worried that I'd be sitting at home someday thinking maybe I let a great opportunity slip because of some temporary homesickness. So many times I had the homesickness, I just made myself fight through it for a couple of months. And in my experience, and it's not everyone's, but my experience is it eventually subsided and I began to enjoy my football again. So whatever makes you happy. If you're going to be happier back home, I'd encourage the Irish guys to go home. You've given it a shot. Make yourself happy.
Exactly. And the likes of Conor, I think, has been, you know, he's obviously gone through a lot this year. And I think the enjoyment factor was going out of it. And I think genuinely he misses his family and wants to be around his family more. And he wants to play for Tyrone as well, which, you know, it's a good aspiration to have. So,
and he's had a really good career. You can't exactly accuse him of not giving it a good shout. He was a brilliant player that probably basically every club would take if they had the opportunity. So he's gone home at no doubts, and he's a perfect example of a bloke who can go home, enjoy his football, knowing full well he gave it everything. So yeah, going home is sometimes the best option.
Yeah, you mentioned accelerating your career earlier, and you know, if you could wind the clock back a little bit, you know, and you've had a marvelous career, Zach, but how would you, you know, fast track your career if you were, 19, 20, 21 again, sitting on an AFL list playing seconds football?
Yeah, it's a good question. I always thought, like, when people ask older players, like, would you do it again or would you take it all again? And generally they say, no. Like, I think I'd probably take it again in a second. I'd do it all again. Now, effort was never an issue. I couldn't have trained much harder. In fact, there might be times I would have trained a bit less. I'm not sure. I think when I probably got comfortable in the side, but just being in the side, which is fine, because sometimes you can try too hard in games and go outside team structures and you can cost the team and cost yourself. But I do reckon there was a couple of years there that I could almost cut out my career, pull the future good footy and to fill that gap. Now, that might be just confidence, and I reckon it probably was. For a good bit of my career, I played third fiddle or fourth fiddle in terms of halfbacks at Carlton to guys like Heath Scotland, who was probably my number one mentor I've had in my career, probably the biggest influence on me as a player, but Cade Simpson. Then Sam Doherty came to the club and he just exploded one year. I won't say out of nowhere, but he really just started dominating. And for all that period of my career, I was content being a really good team player, but never really straining myself too much in what I was capable of. And I can't help, and I'm not sure what I'd do differently, but the competitor in me can't help but think maybe I could have been better, quicker. And I'm honestly not sure what I'd do differently. I feel like it's probably a confidence thing, but I'm not sure how that would look if I were to do it again.
Yeah, I remember one of the key, like Neil Danaher was our coach at the time, and him and Chris Fagg and Brian Royal, there was a cohort of coaches there around Melbourne Football Club when I was there. And they kept, and they just didn't know back then, but they wanted me to do more kicking, more running, more jumping, more marking, you know, to fast track my development. And my body broke down because I didn't have the foundations put in. You know, the first time I lifted weights was when I was 17 and I came to Melbourne Football Club. You know, you didn't have those foundations in place. And, you know, the sports science has come along so far, you know, in 15, 20 years, and it's just changed so much. But, you know, patience is a virtue, unfortunately, in this game. You do have to be impatient to learn, I believe, as well. But, you know, you have to do it in a smart way too.
Yeah, and saying all that stuff about how I'd like to fast track myself, I might also just be kidding myself. There's a good chance that I couldn't have done it any better than I did. And it's probably just the 30-year-old, you know, 200-game player looking back at the 50-game player thinking, I should have been better than I was. But like you say, overtraining is also a really significant risk. So I definitely wouldn't change the effort I put in because I'm not sure I could have put much more in without breaking down.
Yeah, that's one thing I do see, you know, at home, especially within club, but even in county football as well, the amount of training that is done compared to games, you know, and it's, you know, everything's obviously we've got more time and resources here to monitor it and all that sort of stuff. But like I see boys that are on the county team at home and some of them that are taking breaks at 25 years of age and 24 years of age and need a year out because they're overtrained and stuff. Like, you know, it's a curse that, you know, I think it's gone too far in some cases and not enough in others. But so getting that balance right, and we got to remember that GAA players aren't professional. You know, so you need to find that balancer of amateurism as well, because, you know, they have to get up and go to university or college or work or whatever it is the next day, where, you know, the lucky thing, you may get to lie in, even though you might have two kids, you know, jumping over you, you know, at all hours in the morning. But you do have that luxury of time of, you know, sleep and good nutrition and all that sort of stuff, which are key elements. So
I sometimes wonder what people's perception is of a professional environment. And the impression I get from back home is that it's like drill sergeant desk, like, oh, it's a professional environment. So they're probably up at 6 a.m. and like breakfast is perfect. And then it's straight into training for 4 hours and then it's weights and all this thing. And like, it's actually a little bit more casual than that. And like for all the sports science that's and all the sports science innovation we've had, you still can't just train nonstop for 12 hours. Like you're still meat and bone. And I sometimes wonder what they perceive professional environments to be. And I reckon a lot of them think of it as like a boot camp. It's just not really like that.
No, definitely. And even my time up at the Giants, you know, with Leon Cameron, because of Sydney traffic, and you know, Sydney traffic is terrible at the best of times, but we, and he was the pioneer of leaving the boys in, let the peak hour go and bring them in at 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, you know, and yeah, get them home before the 4 o'clock rush type thing. And work beautifully for them at times.
Yeah, practically speaking, it passes the common sense test, and that's kind of what I reckon some people maybe don't quite get, that it's not all, we're not soldiers.
Yeah, definitely. So, look, Zaki, 199 games so far. You know, we've got a bit of a WhatsApp Irish group here, and there was text messages going in and congratulations and different things like that and Instagrams and all that sort of stuff. And about what? An hour before the game, the X came through, Zach's out, and I went off. You know? So anyway, the hype.
2 weeks of build-up. It's just smart. 2 weeks of Bloody 200. Yeah.
Well, look, it's a massive achievement, and congratulations. You know, you're only second person to play 200 games plus in the game, and you know, there's been a variety. There's been 60 plus players, men, come through the game here, and you know, only a handful to go on and even play one game. You know, let alone so it's a credit to you, and you know, it's been a massive journey for you, and you know, for I guess. It's a tough thing. It's a really, really tough thing, and it's not for everyone. And to transition over and to play, it's, you know, it's not an easy walk of life, because you've been at it now, you know, 11 years or so, and you've probably another at least 4 or 5 years in you with the body that you have on you. So, you know, it's a real credit to you. You know, is there any sort of takeaway messages that you'd like to give, like, younger fellas that are looking at this? And I'm not highlighting that the fact that there's going to be a mass exodus of recruitment done in Ireland or anything, but you know, I'm sure there is people keen in Ireland to put their hand up and trial for this game at some stage, but that's sort of the one thing. Is there any advice that you would put on the table now?
Well, yeah, again, the thing I always said is it's not a holiday, it's a wonderful lifestyle that's got potential for great wage and you know, great longevity in a very highly competitive field, but it's not a holiday. And if you treat it like that, you'll get found out really quickly. Now, clubs are really good at looking after the younger players now, and again, you can be doing an awful lot worse than training an AFL club. But if you've real aspirations being a long term professional player, you're not coming out on huge contracts and driving fancy cars for a while. You really have to earn your stripes, and I love that aspect. I love the idea of having to earn the respect, especially now that I'm a bit older and I feel like I have earned respect of at least some teammates. I'm actually quite proud of how much of a struggle it was early. Again, it's much better now than it was, but you'd want to be serious about your career if you're coming out here, because it's pretty tough.
Mm. And how have you helped shape, I guess, Mark O'Connor and Stefan Ogbar, you know, their careers? Obviously, you know, Stefan's struggling with injuries over the last number of years, but Mark's career to an extent, like, have you helped, you know, play a role, because similar positions, down back, you know, are you the godfather of the Irish boys down in Geelong? Like, how does that come out to play, you know, from a mentoring point of view?
Yeah, well, I remember the major benefit of having Satanta at Carlton when I first arrived was it was the nonchalant conversations you could have about club and county football or something that was happening back home, as opposed to the big arm around the shoulder and breaking down vision of games, although that plays a big part as well. So I love the idea of the Irish guys being here and we can just spitball about club football, because, as you know, most people don't really understand the distinction between club and county football, so it's hard to have a conversation when they don't know the difference. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, like, so, yeah, Merrick's taken very little mentorship, really. He's incredibly switched on and has really driven his own career to an incredibly high standard. He's already in our leadership group, so that'll give you an idea of how much he's fast-tracked his own career. And you look at someone like Stefan there, who is... he's probably the best athlete I think I've ever seen. He's just freakish in almost every way, and had a fairly significant setback with an Achilles injury last January. He's already back playing. It was like a 6-7 month injury for him, which is crazy. But again, like, I really only view my role as being a sounding board for them when things either are going good or not going good. And I've tried to not hassle them very much, but they haven't taken much mentorship, really. I've tried to just be there if they feel the need to talk to an Irish accent.
Yeah, that's great. Now, look, at every time I speak to them, they say you play a pivotal role. So I think you're being a little bit modest with the role you play in those lives, in the boys' lives down there. You know, this weekend, obviously, is the big 200. You know, hopefully you get up and play. I don't need to know the team yet or anything like that. But hopefully you get the 200 mark. Maybe you're stringing out another break. How was the real? I'm not sure if people saw this, but it was a big hit. And you know, you spoke about it, and that it was that big of a hit, you'd want to buy a pint for the person that did it to you. You know, so, like, it was a really big hit. Like, most people, I would have stayed down for a lot longer than you did anyway.
It was one of those caught me totally blindside and genuinely wasn't expecting it. And I've had a few reasonable knocks in games, but I can honestly say that was the sorest I've ever played. he just flushed me and I turned into it and exposed my ribs and he got down low and smashed me. So, yeah, it's not too bad. It was still a bit sore, you know, a week post, and I've been carrying a bit of a knee injury for quite a while now as well. So, I was pretty close to playing on the weekend. In fact, I was playing right up until as late as you can be playing.
Yeah. I did see you going through a bit of a fitness test out in the ground.
Felt not too bad, but the risk, as far as the medicals and coaching that were concerned, outweighed the potential benefits, especially because, you know, we're heading into a finals campaign now. Unfortunately, we managed to win anyway, so clearly not that pivotal to the team. But should be all good this weekend, and it will be nice to play at 200. As you say, it's in the grand scheme of things, it's reasonably modest, but I'm quite proud of the fact that I've been able to play for as long as I have, without getting injured, but a lot of that's probably luck, as you know.
Yeah, luck, and probably, you know, a very durable body as well. But also, you know, just speaking through and obviously knowing you, is that, you know, you do have this quiet but ruthless mindset to go about your business quite privately, and which is a great trait. And, you know, even the fact that, you know, I know you do a lot of education off field around the game and knowing your opposition and stuff like that. And, you know, as the fella says back home, you leave no stone unturned, you know. So it's a credit to you. It's absolutely great. I'm very proud, as I mentioned to you before, of the fact that you're about to play, you know, 200 games, and to be in an era where an Irish player is able to do that in the AFL is tremendous, regardless of the sport. You know, it's a fair achievement to pull on a jersey, you know, 200 times. So congratulations and well done on that. One thing maybe before we go, the big difference between cultures. You know, what's the couple of things between the Irish, even though they're so close, what are the big differences in cultures between Ireland and Australia?
Well, yeah, actually, the cultural similarities far outweigh the differences. And that's probably part of what helped with the transition. I think a big coffee culture here versus a big drinking culture back home, although they can hold their liquor here as well. I do think Australia is deeply kind of patriotic and proud of who they are. I think the same is true back home, probably on a smaller scale, as we've already talked about how tight the communities are back home. I'm not sure it's exactly the same here. Everyone's really proud to be Australian, as opposed to be particularly proud of their hometown. Mm. Whereas back home, you probably get everyone's proud of their hometown and
yes,
not Irish, so it's grand.
Until the World Cup comes around every 4 years.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden we find our Irish flags and Irish paint. Yeah. So I think the similarities vastly outweigh the differences, and that helped tremendously with the transition. But like I've spent my entire adult life here. I was 18 when I come out. So I'm not sure I'm great at actually telling you the differences between the cultures. I was in school and then came straight here basically. So I don't know if how I view the world has been shaped by being in Australia, or just the fact that I've been grown, like I've spent all my adult life here. So of course my worldview has changed. But yeah, I'm actually really proud of how much time I've spent here. I love the country. I think it's a wonderful place to live and have a family, but I'm probably not the best at distinguishing between the two, because really I only know this one right now.
And finally, does Zach Tui have aspirations to play for Laois and Port Laois on an ongoing basis in the future?
Yeah. Yeah, I still do. I still do. I've always said I'd love to go back and play. I will definitely play with Port Laois. And as long as my body lets me, and it depends on how beaten up I am at the end of my career, I'd love to play with Laois. I've never played a senior championship game for Laois. So I absolutely have aspirations to do that. But as you know, this game is particularly grueling, and not many 35-year-olds, or I hope that's what I am when I'm finished, come out of it moving as well as they did 10 years prior. But as long as my body lets me, I'd love to play for Laois.
And that'd be great. And probably Ross Molny would be still playing then as well.
Geez, you couldn't come down with a shovel, could you?
Yeah. Look, great. Zach, look, good luck this weekend. Congratulations on your 200 again. I'll text you on the weekend again. Look, very proud. Best of luck. And thanks for your time.
So that was Zach Toohey on the Warriors podcast for you today. A big thanks to him and Nicholas Walsh for their time and contributions. And a big thanks to you, the 42 members, as always, for your support and listening. get in touch with us if you have ideas for future episodes. You can email us at sport@the42.ie or tweet us at warriors_GA. We'll be back next week with another guest. So until then, take care.
They compared Tyrone to the British Army. Once we crossed the border, we had no power. I think we've a bit of power now.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.